Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 440, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallisch. I'm joined today by Mark Cobb from ComputerTechsReno.com. How you doing, Mark?
Excellent. How are you?
I am doing great. Good. Are you ready to talk some tech?
Yes.
All right.
Always ready for tech.
We've been trying to meet up for the last, I don't know, 6-8 months or something like that, and just things get in the way on both ends, and finally we're able to meet up and actually do a show. So this is pretty cool.
Yep.
All right. And it's been, now you've been on Podnuts Daily years ago. I don't know how many years ago, but it's been a long time ago. So if you could, why don't you go ahead and start off for the people that don't know you and kind of give us a backstory of basically how you got started in computer repair and you know, what you're doing today.
Okay. Well, as most techs have started, you know, they started repairing computers for friends and neighbors and such. You know, this is over probably 15 years ago or so. I was in the advertising business, and I decided to, at one point when the advertising business was kind of going downhill after 9/11, I decided, well, you know, you know, why don't I start a computer repair business? I know how to advertise my business. You know, I'm good with customer service skills, also working in a supermarket as well. So picked up good, you know, customer service skills there. And so I started my business in 2003, and here we are, what, 12, 13 years later, and each year keeps continually getting better and better. So doing well.
Oh, that's cool. So now, so you kind of started off the same way I started off. Now you're a one man show, right?
That's correct.
Okay. You're a one man show, and you know, you've been doing this for quite a while, and you're in the Reno area. So now we were talking a little bit before the show. Now you said most of your customers are actually residential.
Yes. Yeah. I'd say 99% residential. You know, I looked about, you know, getting into businesses, a couple things that kind of shy me away from businesses. First of all, I don't have, you know, being a one-man show, I can't provide the response times they need. You know, they call and say, oh, our network's down, we need you at 3 a.m. Well, you know, I've got a family. I'm not going to respond at 3 a.m.
Right.
And I'm usually booked, you know, depending on time of year and call load and all that, anyway, typically at least one day in advance, and sometimes up to 5 days in advance. So, and, you know, probably on average about 5 on-site appointments a day. So it's, you know, I don't really have, can't really just drop everything for my current customers and go service someone. So, you know, rather than dealing with businesses who are most likely going to be at some point, you know, get upset with my, you know, lack of response time, I just say, you know, no, I just don't handle businesses.
No, that's good. Yeah. Cause I've gone through the same things where I'm like, yeah, I can't be there, you know, 24/7. It's not something I do full time. And what I'm realizing is there's a lot of people out here right now who are basically, they're kind of doing one or the other. There are some that are doing a hybrid, but it's kind of like, it seems like people are focusing and saying, okay, I'm going to do residential, or they're focusing and saying, okay, I'm going to do business. But I think a lot of times it's really hard to kind of have that hybrid approach. And there's a lot of people out there that are doing, you know, not only part-time, I mean, obviously you're doing this full-time, but people are doing it part-time and they're going, you know what? I don't know if I can, you know, handle those businesses and stuff out there. And I'm not ready to step out into that area right now. So, right. I think it's reassuring that, because there's a lot of people that tell you, oh, break fix is dead, which I, you know, laugh at voraciously, but, just because I know that everything that we do, whether from a business standpoint or from a residential standpoint, is in fact some form of break fix, you know, altogether.
Mm-hmm. I was just looking at, you mentioned that, you know, probably 3/4 of my calls are, you know, all troubleshooting things. So, and they're existing customers, you know, and it's anywhere from, you know, .NET is not working, or I'm just looking at the last week's calls here. This guy on a Mac got a pop-up saying his computer's infected. getting a lot of that lately.
Okay. Wait. You said on a Mac, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I just want all those Mac fanboys out there to know that they're not exempt anymore.
Right. Yeah. And this one turned out to be nothing wrong with his computer, no viruses or anything.
Sure.
It was just, right. just a pop-up window. You know, he stumbled upon an infected website, and, you know, just, you know, popping up the scary warning, you know, saying, oh, we know where you are. You're on a Mac. You've got problems. Call this toll-free number. And people, you know, the window that pops up looks really legitimate, but it's just all in a browser window. And stupidly, Safari and the new Microsoft Edge browser, whenever you close the browser or force quit the browser, it brings up the last pages that it opened. So it goes right back to that same thing. So you think you've got a major problem, and it's a lot of just, yeah.
No, I didn't realize that. So I just started playing around with Windows 10. I wasn't one of those people. I've got it on secondary computers. I still don't have it on my primary.
Same.
Yeah, I use Windows 8.1, which works perfectly fine for me. Everything that I do works on it. So I'm like, but I did want to play around with it. And, you know, Edge seems fine. But yeah, that is kind of disconcerting that if it's, I know they do that as a convenience to open up the browser to the last page that you were on. But at the same time, you know, do you know of a setting in there where you can actually turn it on to where it will open up a fresh page every time?
In Edge, I don't know of one. In Safari, I think there is a setting in Safari.
Okay.
But yeah, but Microsoft Edge, again, they're taking out of a lot of the control on it. So this one, in order to fix Edge, had to Google the how to fix it. Basically, you have to delete the Edge browser cache, which is, you know, down deep in the app data folder. And once you do that, then it'll at least open with a fresh window. But nothing that I could tell someone over the phone that,
right,
you know, they would want to try it on their own.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm wondering, so I haven't done any cleaning on any of the systems with Windows. Well, no, I take that back. I actually have, but I don't think I was having a problem with Edge or anything. I did I usually do a hard reset on all browsers, usually when I go in, especially on residential computers. I know a lot of people go, oh, you can't do that. And I said, no, I can. And I've never had any pushback from anybody. I just go, hey, there was a bunch of stuff in there and I got rid of it. And, you know, you're starting over fresh. And people are like, okay.
on a malware call, I'll do that. Particularly, I've seen, I remember one issue come to the top of my mind here where, you know, we threw every tool at it. And then later I said, oh, you know, I don't think I ever deleted the browser cache. And deleting the browser cache finally got rid of this thing. So there was something in the browser cache that was causing problems. But, you know, I spent hours and hours on this thing and just, you know, the simple thing fixed it. But I will delete temporary let's see. The one thing I do leave in are cookies and website data.
Okay.
Because I don't want them to, you know, go to their computer and, oh, I forgot my Yahoo password. It just came up all the time. So, you know, I don't want to have to deal with that. And then history as well. A lot of people like to, particularly in Internet Explorer, they like to click the little down arrow button to find, you know, the five websites that they typically go
right,
to.
Right, exactly.
And if I cleared that out, they don't know how to type in www.yahoo.com. So,
you know what I do for a lot of those people, though? What I'll do is I'll actually set their tabs up in their browser, you know, because usually it's only four or five things that that they go to. And so I'll show them, you know, I'll go through and go, okay, let's give all the things that you go to. We'll have it up here in the tabs. So basically every time you open your browser, all you got to do is click the tabs. And most people are like going, oh, that's really cool. Thanks.
You know? Yeah. I'll typically at least put their home page as a on the favorites bar.
Okay.
So if for some reason you know, ABG changes their home page or whatever, at least they can just click on the little Yahoo button. That's probably 90% of my customers use Yahoo for a home page. So I just, you know, put a Yahoo shortcut right there and they can get to it that way.
Yeah, Yahoo is definitely still popular. You know, it's almost as popular as AOL, but you know, I don't know, maybe not quite.
Yeah. Well, our so we've got two internet service providers. The main ones, Charter provides cable internet, and AT&T provides you know, their UVerse and then DSL.
Okay.
And you know, so probably it's probably a 50-50 mix of those two. And of course, everybody on AT&T uses the AT&T Yahoo Mail, so that's kind of their homepage, either okay. att.net or yahoo.com. They eventually go through Yahoo to get their mail anyway, so that's typically what I set it up as.
That's good. That's good. Now, as far as, so, you know, I know you're talking about AVG there, so as far as, you know, what do you recommend for your customers as far as, like, antivirus and stuff like that? And do you do any type of managed services for your residential customers, or is it all just, you know, when they need help, basically, you're swooping in there to help them fix their problems?
Yeah, I haven't done managed services. What I do, let me do the antivirus first. I have been recommending AVG forever.
Okay.
Until this year, I actually stumbled upon Bitdefender free.
Okay.
And I've been, preferring that, now, because, you know, they don't pop up every 2 days. Oh, you know, check out our speed booster, or scan for driver errors. Right. Or, you know, whatever. So, you know, the constant upsell with AVG. So I've been very happy with, you know, Bitdefender. I don't like recommending the paid antiviruses, because, you know, there's no one that's 100% anyway. So I don't know, something about it, it just makes me feel bad if I have, you know, recommend, oh, yeah, pay $50 a year for this antivirus, but you still might get a virus. I'd rather say, don't pay anything for an antivirus, and you'll still get an antivirus, or still get a virus.
Right.
So I don't know. So that's kind of the philosophies I've had on that. As far as managed services, I've kind of done my own hybrid of that, if you will.
Okay.
I actually have done a quarterly maintenance plan, in which, in the morning, before I go out for my on-sites for the day, I usually schedule for like 7:30 and 7:45 in the morning. I'll schedule about an hour for a quarterly maintenance plan. And what I do for each customer, you know, for about an hour, I'm, you know, deleting temporary data, you know, files, making sure their antivirus is up to date. And this is all via remote.
Okay.
And I give them a little bit of a discount off my hourly rate, because I don't have to drive out there, and I can sit at home, you know, doing it in my pajamas.
Right.
While I'm also working on someone else's computer 15 minutes later, so I can, you know, I can bounce back and forth. And then I'm using TechWaru to kind of go through my list of the tools that, you know, one by one, that, you know, basically brings up, you know, this control panel or that that tool or whatever, and just kind of, you know, doing scans and, you know, checking things out. And it's been great. I've got probably, I'm booked on average probably every morning doing at least one appointment a day, you know, Monday through Friday of that. So it's great. I've already made, you know, $80 without even stepping foot out of the door. And, you know, more and more people are, you know, just pushing the, you know, the convenience of not having to worry about the updates, you know, because
right.
Java's popping up, you know, oh, is this the real Java? Is the fake Java? You know, do we really need Java now? Do we not? So, you know, I take care of those Java updates. If the antivirus says it needs an update, I'm doing that. I'm checking for, you know, I've got probably 20 different things I'm checking for. And, you know, it's working out well. So that's my managed service. And nice thing too, is I'm able to, you know, communicate with them. I talk for them like 5 minutes beforehand, saying, you know, have you been having any problems? You know, is there something in particular? If it's something that, you know, I can do in, you know, a couple seconds, or answer a quick question, you know, I'll just include that as part of the service. Or if it looks like it's going to be a major deal, I'll say, well, you know, hey, why don't we schedule for tomorrow, or schedule for an on-site or something. And I'll take care of that issue as well. But, you know, at least, one thing I like about the interaction part versus just the managed service, where a program automatically does it, you know, I'm talking to them, I'm continuing that personal relationship with them. So, and you know, it works good for me.
No, I think that's a great idea, because I think a lot of times, you know, we get stuck in these ruts of thinking only a certain way, but somebody will come along and say, hey, have you thought about doing it this way? And I think that's great for a quarterly plan. So, you know, you're talking every 3 months. you're getting with that person, you're creating that contact between them, building that relationship, and you're doing their updates, you're cleaning their computer up. And so that, because I would say that's probably about the time within a 3-month time period of where things are really starting to just starting to get gunked up. And, you know, and it's, and if you let it go past that, it's going to keep getting worse and worse and worse. And I tell a lot of people, I'm like, there are people that will not bring their computer to me, you know, until it's like, you know, it's been slow for 8 months and they can't use Internet Explorer or Google Chrome or whatever. They can't get on the internet. So all of a sudden they go, yeah, I need your help.
Yeah.
And, you know, doing the quarterly plan, that's a great idea because you can keep that, you know, on an ongoing basis. Now, if you don't mind me asking, what do you charge for the quarterly plan for your customers?
$80
okay.
per quarter. And I actually do it, you know, they pay me at the end of the service. You know, these are all established customers.
Sure.
So I'm not worrying about, you know, they're going to, you know, hang up and not pay me. So,
sure.
So it's $80 a quarter. And then at the end of the appointment, after paying me, we schedule the next quarterly appointment. Actually using one of your other guests was using, was it Acuity? Acuity, I think.
That sounds familiar, and, yes.
Yeah, A-C-U-I-T-Y, I believe, or something like that. And basically, I just go through and, you know, we schedule the next one at that time for 3 months out. I do have maybe 5 customers that said, oh, well, you know, I'd rather do it every 6 months. I said, yeah, fine. We, you know,
right.
we can do 6 months for you. And then what Acuity does, I've got it set up so they get an immediate email reminding of it. And then 10 days prior to the appointment, they get an email reminder. And then 3 days prior to the appointment, they get another email reminder. So, you know, sometimes particularly with, you know, a lot of my customers have medical appointments and stuff like that. They're, you know, they may need to reschedule or forgot about it or whatever. So at least those appointments 10 days and 3 days prior, you know, remind them. And everything's been working great. No glitches at all with it.
That's great. That's awesome.
Yep.
Now, do you just invoice them afterwards and then they just kind of pay afterwards, or do you kind of set that up ahead of time before you actually start?
So I finish the service and then we just go to my website. I use Square and I also use the Square Market. So Square has a feature besides little card swiper where you can put a like a little Square Market on your basically, it's off of their domain, but I, you know, I have a link on my webpage to it, to the Square Market, and I say, okay, you know, 1 hour remote service, and then you get the $9 discount for the doing the maintenance plan, so it's $80, and I just go through, I take them to the page, and probably 90% of the time, I'm filling out their name and, you know, credit card number while they're reading it to me over the phone. So while I'm still connected remotely to them, we're just filling in their information. Everything looked good, great, submit. Payments through and yeah, it works out good.
That is great. You know, I've been using Square for years. I've just been using a little reader. I didn't realize that they had something you could actually link to your website.
Yeah. Yeah. It's called, I forget exactly. I'll send you the link later,
okay.
But yeah, you can set up a Square Market. And the only weird thing about it is it's typically, I think, set up for goods rather than services, or however they say in their thing, you know, it could be for goods or services. But at the end of the, you know, when they get their confirmation email and confirmation on the website, it says, okay, your goods will be shipped in, you know, within 7 days or something. Well, obviously I'm not shipping any goods. I've just
okay.
provided a service. So the receipts look a little funny. You know, I've had one or two people say, you know, I paid this, but what are you shipping me? I said, it was just for the service that was already provided. So Square needs to work on that part a little bit,
okay.
But otherwise, you know, it's great. And nice thing about that is you only get the – because Square has two fees. They've got the 2.75% fee for swiped cards.
Right.
Or if you manually enter a card, you know, like on your phone or something, it's 3.5%. Well, at least going through the Square Market on through their website, it's still the 2.75% fee. So
nice. Okay. Great.
So I've got the extra – 0.75% there.
Wow, that's a great tip. All right, very cool.
Yeah,
that's a great way to, you know, like I said, keep in contact with the customers. That's cool. So you're still recommending, and I can understand this because I've gone through the same thing. You know, Bitdefender free. I was checking out the paid versions of Bitdefender, and you know, I was trying to get it at a low, you know, price where I could offer it to my customers to where it was a little less, you know, painful. And, you know, I think I've come down to the point of because I have people ask me to say, how can I stop from getting infected? And I, you know, I basically have to tell them, you can't. I said, the best thing that I can probably provide for you is this managed service, which is going to have a managed antivirus, and it's going to let me know things ahead of time. So if you have a hard drive that's getting filled up, or it's, you know, starting to show signs of wear or whatever, you're going to get, you know, maybe some smart data from that, and, you know, and be able to tell them, hey, looks like you got some issues going on here. You know, let's go ahead and get that thing in for a checkup or something like that, and kind of protect them before they get to that point where all of a sudden, you know, it's like, your hard drive doesn't spin at all and your data is gone and we can't get it back, you know? So that's kind of what I'm looking at, a way to get that into the residential hands, you know, as far as to bring it down to a price point that's going to make sense for them. And then hopefully it will let me know ahead of time if there's problems. And it's going to be an experiment I'm going to try over the next 6 months and see how that works. Because I know there are some people that are doing that for the residential side. And, you know, we'll just give it a shot. Like, you know, obviously you found something that works perfect in your business. And actually you're going to make doing it your way. It sounds like you're making more money anyway. So it makes sense.
You know, I'm hesitant to... I don't know why, but I'm hesitant to provide the free virus removal, you know, guarantee. Sure. if you know, install your, you know, my managed service software on here. So that's just a road I haven't gone down yet. Who knows about the future, but what I'm doing right now works for me. Right. So, and, you know, again, because I would hate to, because, you know, I have a fair amount of virus removals these days. I'm guessing maybe 25%, maybe.
Okay.
It's definitely gone down over the years, but... you know, the fake Microsoft callers or the...
those are horrible.
Those have kind of picked up the slack where the viruses have gone down, yeah.
Yeah, I've had to tell people, you know, I just put a tip out in a, you know, email marketing blast that I put out, you know, a few days ago. And I basically said, yeah, if you get a pop-up that says, call this 1-800 number to fix your problem, you know, it's a scam. I said, you know, call somebody you trust or call me instead, you know, that type of thing. And,
exactly.
You know, just it's amazing because they do look legit, and then people never question it, except sometimes people will get to that point where somebody's actually already remoted into their machine, and then all of a sudden they get that sinking feeling where they go, oh, I think I just screwed up.
I've had people fall for it on more than one occasion. I had one customer probably 2 years ago now, you know, fell for it. I can't remember if it was just the phone call or it was a pop-up. Probably at that time it was just a phone call. He got a call, you know, from Microsoft, supposedly. And, you know, he let him into the computer. And then once he started getting a little hesitant, you know, saying, oh, I'm not too sure about this. You know, let me call my tech, and in which they typically respond, oh, no, only Microsoft can take care of this for you.
Right.
But so he started to get hesitant. Well, the guy started deleting all his files.
Oh.
So he called me. Unfortunately, I had him, you know, he was backed up beforehand, so I was able to get all his files back. But about a year later, he gets another phone call saying, oh, you know, this is so-and-so. We understand you had a bad experience in the past with a remote support scam. We're offering refunds, so let me take control of your computer so I can take you to the website where you can fill out the online claim form.
Oh.
Sure enough, it didn't go an online claim form. This time he puts the password. I forget the name of the password, but it's the one where you basically it's not the user password. It's another one that basically you can't get by unless you do a system restore. It's not a user password. It's not a BIOS password. I'll think of it later.
Okay.
He put a password on the computer, and again, fortunately, system restore was able to wipe that out.
Okay.
But if you know, they're just falling it over and over. You know, they're just, I don't know, they're catching them at the right time, or they sound so legit or whatever, but people just are very gullible. I guess that's...
Well, so I'll give you one better. So my mom basically had gotten a call she had no internet access on her laptop. So she calls Time Warner, who is her cable provider and internet provider. Time Warner sends her over to gives her a 1-800 number to call Microsoft. This is right from Time Warner. And I'm like, first thing I asked her, I said, where did you get the phone number for Time Warner? She goes, right off my Time Warner bill. I'm like, so she was actually talking to Time Warner, and Time Warner gave her this scam number, and they got her in her computer, started messing with things. And finally she, you know, she had this, you know, sinking feeling, and all of a sudden goes, you know, she cut it off and then called me. And I'm like, Ma, why did you just talk to me before, you know?
Right. Yep. I'm 99% sure that some of the, cause I had a customer, 90 years old, call up AT&T. She showed me the number. She called from the bill.
Okay.
And she wasn't able to get her email for some reason. I think she just forgot her password or something. This was a year and a half ago or so. Called AT&T. Well, level one wasn't able to help her. So she was transferred to level two. Level two then said, oh, well, you know, you've got viruses and malware, but for $300, we'll fix it for you.
Yeah.
So I bet 99% sure that there are some offshore tech support people that are, you know, in cahoots with their cousin or whatever, that's saying, you know, tell you what, I work for, AT&T or whatever, and I'm going to send you a sucker every now and then, and let's split the commission that you make off of scamming them. And that's probably what's going on, you know, is these, United States companies offshoring their tech support. It's no longer, you know, in good management, and they're, you know, they're scamming their customers through, you know, their friends and people that are, you know, the third party call centers.
Right. Right. Yeah. So. You know what? It's funny you say that, because you're right. That's exactly what happened. She actually got transferred. She didn't even get the 1-800 number. She got transferred to that number for Microsoft support. And I'm like going, Microsoft doesn't really have support for end users.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, but nobody knows that, because Microsoft's a big company. They're the Windows on my system. That's all I know.
Yep.
Oh, gosh.
So, sad to say, but it actually gives me excuse. I haven't seen the customer in 6 months. So I go over there, make sure they didn't plant anything or put a password or remove the password if now they can't get in. And then just, you know, kind of give them the peace of mind that everything's okay. If they call again, I think I do a lot of grief counseling as well. I have to, you have to provide that comforting feeling that, you know, it's okay. You know, it happens. You know, don't make them feel bad. Make sure that they call you next time.
Right.
Or someone else you trust. People are very happy with, you know, that I'm able to speak with them in a, you know, a calm manner and not embarrass them. They seem to be happy with that.
Yeah. No, you have to definitely treat your customers right. And I think that goes a long way. Yeah. You don't need to, you know, make a bad situation worse, you know, with, right. Ridiculing them or, what were you doing? You know, no, it's just be there for them. And just, I try to let my customers know. Yeah. Just, you know, if you ever have anything come up, just give me a call. Even if if it's just a 30-second phone call and I go, no, that's a scam, and you don't use my service, that's fine. But at least it saves you some time and money. And, so either way. But, it's sad. But, it's like, what's going to be the next big thing? What's going to be the next big scam that they're going to come up with? Because, you know, apparently, you know, people are going to get wary of this. And hopefully we're going to be able to protect our customers to a point where they are wary of calling 1-800 numbers, and they just call us and, hey, can you handle this? Yeah, no problem. You know, we got it. That type of thing.
Yep. But a lot of times now they're calling them rather than the calls coming into them, you know?
Right.
And it's because of something popping up on their screen or an email they got or, you know, whatever. It's just, I don't know what they're going to think of next, but, and a lot of my customers say, well, why don't they use their knowledge for something good, you know, like curing cancer or something, you know? And I say, I don't know. They're just evil people out there that I don't know how they sleep at night.
Exactly. I don't know either. So what types of other things do you do in your business? Are you still doing hardware repair and different things like that?
Yeah, it seems like hard drive repairs come in spurts. You know, I'll have, a couple in a 3 week period or something like that, you know, two, three, right. And then, you know, a couple months will go by and nothing. So it's weird how they come in spurts like that, but mostly anything that I'm Taking offsite, bringing back to my home office is hard drive replacements. Very rarely do I do a virus removal where I got to bring it back, with the exception of one I can think of that recently happened in the last couple of months where, first of all, they had waited for about 3 months after they got this virus till they called me. And then I go on site and figure out, oh, you've got Crypto Locker. And then this lady is actually willing to pay the $1,000 or whatever to get her, to have her stuff unlocked because she's got baby pictures on there and everything. Unfortunately, the URL was no longer working.
Right, because now you're 3 months past the point of, what do they give you, what, three days to a week now or something like that?
Something like that, yeah. But obviously the scammers have been taken down, 3 months later, and she was just crushed because, again, baby pictures and all that. So I told her if I find anything, where you're able to decrypt your drive at some point, I'll let you know. But yeah, I doubt she's ever going to see him again, which is sad.
It is.
But I did sell her a backup hard drive. So.
Okay. And that's, so that's, speaking of that, so that's one of the other things, the reason I decided to do two managed types of services. One's going to be basically the, basically the managed antivirus, Windows updates, third-party updates, all that kind of stuff. And then the second one, for not that much more, is going to include a cloud backup with a local backup. And, if they don't have an external hard drive, I'll go ahead and sell them an external hard drive that they can plug in. And, that way I want to offer something out there that's going to help the customer, because what I'm seeing is a lot of these people are getting to the point where they don't really do anything until, there's a problem. But I think a lot of times I don't know that we're selling them on it, so to speak, as far as, just letting them know, hey, what would happen if you lost all these pictures on your computer today, and so I want to get it to a point where it makes it feasible for them to do it. And it makes it feasible for me to provide that type of service at the same time, because I know, there's all different types of services and some are more expensive than others and that's fine. But, I really want to get it into residential hands. So that's kind of going to be my niche market, so to speak.
Yeah. I kind of made it the goal at the beginning of this year to always carry an external hard drive in my car, and I do that, if they don't have one. They've come down so much over the years.
Oh,
I think the 1 terabyte's $59 now. So
exactly.
I might mark it up $10 or something like that. But I'll set that up. One thing, I ran into a customer the other day. They had bought an external hard drive on their own, but they think just plugging it in, it just backs up automatically. Right. No. You've got to either set up that Western Digital, smartware program, or typically what I do is I on Windows 7 and Windows 10, I'll set up the Microsoft, backup program that's built into Windows. I'll set that up for them. Or in Windows 8, I'll set up file history or something. So I'll set that up for them. I've actually found on several people's computer the WD smartware software that comes on some of them, if they happen to install that, uses a high CPU, so it's conflicting with something or just a poorly written program. But even when it's not backing up, it's just sitting there, taking up a lot of high CPU cycles. So what I'll do is, if I see that, I'll uninstall smartware, just use their external hard drive for the Windows backup or Windows backup program on that.
Right, that's good. Yeah, I just started playing. So one of the things I've used Carbonite for my cloud backup for years, and I've got Acronis for my images and stuff on my local computer. I just upgraded Carbonite because one of the things I'm playing around with right now is doing an external drive, doing the mirror image, and it's not that much more. It's actually only $40 more a year for that program, and basically, that'll give them a full image of their machine. And most people are using laptops, still in this area anyways. And so you plug in that hard drive and, it's only making a mirror image every 24 hours, which I think for residential is more than plenty, and then it gets to a certain point where it might get too big and it'll get rid of the oldest ones and all that kind of stuff. And it's supposed to do it automatically. So I'm going to play around with it, see if it works for me. And then if that's something I can push out to my customers, because I'm one of those people. I'm getting tired of having all these different tools and different things that I have to use to try to make, you know, one type of program work for my customers. And it's hard, but you know, I really would like to get a program that's has everything, you know, ready to go, and I don't have to go outside of that. So,
right. But what do you mean, like a you know, one tool that does backup and clouds?
Yeah, exactly. You know, like a remote managing tool that does, you know, that's going to do the manage antivirus. That's going to check, you know, make sure that the backups are being done. You know, even if you're using third-party tools, to have something that's going to kind of manage everything to where I can look at it and go, hey, is everything green? Great. Oh, is there something red? Oh, okay, let me figure out what's going on over there, and let me, you know, if I need to get a hold of a customer, I'll go ahead and do that. So it's hard, though, you know, because there's a lot of things that are not – nothing's perfect, right?
Jack of all trades, master of none. Exactly. And I've actually written a newsletter article about this. You know, so many of the internet service providers, you know, they want to be your TV provider, your internet right. provider, your telephone provider. And I've done a thing on don't put all your eggs in one basket. You know, yeah. if the Charter cable gets cut down the street, you're going to be out without phone, internet, and everything.
Right.
So that's why I'm, you know, I'm using, you know, AT&T for phone. I'm using Charter for internet. I'm using Dish for TV. You know, I you know, so I'm spending a little bit more at least, you know, I'm not going to lose everything, you know, if something happens, you know, I still have a way around it. And, cause that's happened here, you know, construction workers have, you know, cut a fiber line or something, yeah. and, you know, an area's out for a day and a half or something or whatever. So, you know, I've been urging my customers not to put all their eggs in one basket. Another thing too, again, a lot of my clients are seniors, you know, 60, 70, 80, 90s even.
Okay.
And they're putting, you know, they want to cut their landline. So they only have their cell phone. And it's like, you know, if you have some kind of emergency or something and that cell phone isn't working or whatever, you know, you need the, you know, redundant backup, particularly someone, you know, elderly person or something. They need the redundancy of, you know, if one thing doesn't work, they need to be able to get a hold of someone in emergency another way. So that just whole trend of, you know, cutting the landlines and everything is bugging me.
It, you know, it's tough because I actually, you know, we moved my grandmother off of her landline probably 2 years ago, and she's up in her late 80s. And part of the reason is because she was getting so many phone calls from solicitors. That's all that came in through that phone. And it was like constantly ringing, and it was just horrible during the day. And it was like, okay, so what do we need to do here? You know, now she's in a facility where she has a couple of, you know, cords in certain areas of the place where she lives, where she can, you know, call and get help and all that kind of stuff. But it's tough, you know, and yeah. cell phones, you know, cell phone reception. I mean, it sucks. I don't care where you are. It's the most horrible connection. You know, we're sitting here talking on Skype over the internet. This is clearer than any cell phone I've ever owned in my entire life.
Actually, they just, it's funny you mentioned that, AT&T just rolled out their, they call it the Volt or Volte voice over LTE basically.
Okay.
And it is so, it sounds like a Skype call. Maybe
really?
Even better. I mean, it is so clear. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's getting better. But yeah, you shouldn't have everything all in one basket. So I'm going to get to on that, like a backup for a cell phone, maybe.
Right. Yeah. I don't, you know, it's hard to, you know, I mean, I've been on a cell phone since, you know, 99. I've got, you know, that's when I got rid of my landline. And really, here's the reason why. For me, it was because I was tired of answering my wife's phone calls. She was tired of answering mine. So we got two separate cell phones, her number, my number. The people that wanted to get in touch with us, they were calling that number, and that was it. So,
right.
It's just what's worked out for us. Now, I know there's still a lot of people out there. Yeah, you got the 911 service, you know. I remember back in the day, you know, maybe 8 years ago, maybe not even, maybe 10 years ago, you know, you'd call on a cell phone and, you know, the 911 and the GPS and all that stuff didn't really work. You had to tell them where you at, and they would have to route the phone call to get to your local jurisdiction to wherever right. you were calling from for an emergency. Now, that stuff's changed nowadays where they basically can pinpoint and know exactly where you're at and get it to the right, you know, 911 hub. But yeah, it is kind of scary.
Some people that have asked me about, you know, hey, you know, should I cut my, you know, how can I save money on my telecommunications stuff? I've mentioned to them, you know, what if the big one hits? Earthquake, you know, back here, that's kind of the thing that we think about, you know, tornadoes, not, don't have to worry about that here, but, or hurricanes, but, you know, earthquake maybe, or wildfire comes through here or something. The cell phone network's going to be jammed. You're not going to be able to get through. Right. So what's the alternative? You know, the old copper wire going down the street, that's probably going to work because everybody else is going to be jamming the other lines. You know, I say that and I tell my customers that, but then on my own, I'm thinking, okay, well, when is the, in my lifetime, 47 years, you know, when has the big one ever hit here where I've actually needed that second, you know, second method of communication? Never. You know, when's the wildfire hit come through my neighbor? You know, never. But, you know, if it happens, at least I want my customers to be prepared. I want to give them, you know, maybe that second peace of mind, you know, to peace of mind that, you know, they've got a backup. At least I gave them good advice. Maybe if I don't always follow my own advice, but
what do they call that? Eating your own dog food,
right? Something like that.
Yeah. No, it's tough because I do agree with you. You shouldn't really fall, you know, all into you know, put all your eggs in one basket type thing. Just because you're right, it's that failover. It's one of those things. It's almost like insurance. Uh-huh. It's like how many times do you really use your insurance in your lifetime? For most people, some people never have to claim against their insurance their whole entire lives, you know, but there's those, you know, when you do have to claim, you're all of a sudden you're like, man, I'm glad I had that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's tough. It is tough.
Well, then they put stipulations like, oh, you want earthquake insurance? Well, that's an extra X amount per month because that, you know, or flood insurance, you know, that's extra. So, you know, so much for insurance companies.
Yeah. We had a big long show on that today, talking about insurance for tech companies. And it's, you know, it's hard for, you know, a lot of the smaller places to get those, you know, that type of insurance and make sure that you're protected, because they'll say, you know, you've got general liability or errors and omissions, and, but it's still not going to cover everything that you could ever think of under the sun, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the unfortunate part. You go, okay, yeah, great. I paid for this insurance. And one thing comes across and you go, yeah, sorry, we don't protect for that. You should have gotten this rider or this insurance to protect you for that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's tough. So I heard you mention TechWaru, and so that's your tool of choice. Now you use that tool remotely also?
Yes.
Okay.
For my quarterly remote maintenance, I definitely use that 100% of the time because, you know, I've got my tools that I have all lined up, and basically it goes through one by one and launches them. And I don't run it in full automatic mode. I like to, you know, have it stop at each thing so I can, you know, manually, for example, on disk cleanup, for example, you know, I don't necessarily want to delete the recycle bin just in case, you know, some people, you know, want to keep things in the recycle bin until they delete them. So I don't have it do that, but I have it delete like temp files and certain things. And I want to see if it's got the, you know, Windows 10 automatic backup on there that I know they're never going to go to Windows 10 from a Windows 7 computer, you know, I'll decide whether I'm going to check that or not to remove that, you know, based on, you know, what I expect they're going to do or not. I don't know if you knew this, but even if you didn't select, yeah, I want Windows 10, Microsoft still downloaded the full, you know, 5+ gigabyte file onto people's computers. So I've got some customers that are on, you know, Dish broadband or cellular networks, and, you know, their data bill went up 5 gigabytes because Microsoft decided to, oh, you know, we're just going to put it on, you know, download it anyway, just in case they click yes. So I don't know if you knew that or not.
No, yeah, I did hear that. Now, my understanding was, and I don't know that I haven't gotten a confirmation on this. My understanding is that even if you delete that file folder, my understanding is it could actually re-download again.
I've experienced that, yeah, because I deleted on mine. And what's weird is I wasn't able to delete all of it. There were some files that it wouldn't let me delete, but it eventually re-downloaded again. I've got on my main computer, I've got 120 gigabyte SSD, and yeah, it's, you know, down under 10 gigabytes now, thanks to Microsoft. So for, you know, I don't want Windows 10, so leave me alone.
Exactly. You know, I do want Windows 10. I can't justify. I've got too many things that I do on my production machine that I don't know that are going to work 100%. And plus, to be honest with you, I just redid this system back in last November, and I'm just not looking forward to that task again. So
I've had quite a few people that have gone against my advice, particularly I've told everybody to kind of
wait.
Let's hold off. Yeah, wait. Yeah. Just right. Because, you know, my on the TV commercials make it look like the best thing since sliced bread. It's not that great. On a desktop computer, you're not going to be using Cortana because you don't have a microphone hooked up to it.
Right.
Just a number of different things. But some people have, you know, in fact, not going off a tangent here, but another client a couple of weeks ago, we purposely got them a Windows 7 computer because that's what they were familiar with all along. And then once Windows 10 came out, they clicked the download for it, and I had to come back. I said, well, we got you a Windows 7 computer, so you wouldn't have to worry about Windows 8 or Windows 10 or anything above that, for 5 years. But you put Windows 10 on there anyway. I didn't quite put it in those words.
Right.
But they had ended up upgrading to 10, so I had to revert them back. Actually, the reverting back took about 5 minutes. I was surprised how quickly I was able to revert back. Now, if they wait more than 30 days, then
they're locked in.
Then they're hosed. Yeah, yeah. They're locked in. But the one, I think I've done it twice. I've reverted them back to Windows 7, and it went smoothly.
Now, Mark, it's free.
Free doesn't always mean.
I know, but I'm just saying, from a customer standpoint, I mean, seriously, anything that's why do you think we remove all these free tools all the time? You know, PC, whatever, you know, speeder upper, whatever, these stupid tools that we know, yeah, maybe they work, but it's the problem is that all the stuff they bring down with them just bogs that computer down. Now, I will tell you, as far as Windows 10, I took my wife's 7-year-old laptop. It was an old Gateway computer, dual core processor. It's only got 4 gigs of RAM in it. And what I did is I actually did the upgrade. Still, you know, her computer was running it was just running really bad even with Windows 7 on it. So I had upgraded, or I basically did an upgrade, and it still was running really, really slow. I did a clean install on that machine. And now, mind you, it had a clean install of Windows 7 on it. So this wasn't the issue. I did a clean install of Windows 10, and that machine actually runs remarkably better. I couldn't believe it. I was blown away. I was like, really? This is very interesting. Because I was at the point where I was like going, I don't know if I'm going to use this computer for anything. I think I'm just going to, even though it still works, I think I'm going to toss it to the side. Or, you know, I guess I could have thrown an SSD or something in there. But this is on a spinning drive, and it actually does work better. So
yeah. Well, one reason I haven't recommended it for most of my clients is, again, they're, you know, 60, 70, 80, 90,
right,
who do not like change.
Sure.
So, you know, I said, yeah, if you want change.
40-year-olds don't like change.
Right, yeah. But and it's surprisingly how many people have, because when you upgrade to Windows 10, that little E that used to be Internet Explorer is now Microsoft Edge, but they still think it's Explorer, and they're wondering why certain websites don't work. Well, you know, you want Internet Explorer, you've got to now search for Internet Explorer. It's not the E on the taskbar anymore.
That's
one thing I do is customize that and put Internet Explorer back there, you know, show them that, you know, this one's for Edge if you ever want to try that, but I don't recommend it yet because, you know, there's still a lot of websites it's not compatible with.
How do you get Internet Explorer back on the Windows 10? Because I downloaded Google Chrome and Firefox right away just to have alternate browsers on my Windows 10 machines, but I never did look into it yet.
Yeah, you just search, start typing Internet Explorer. It comes up in the search, and then you right click on it and pin to taskbar.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, no, that's easy enough. Okay,
I've had trouble getting desktop shortcuts to on Windows 10. Some things you can, you used to be able to just right click, send to desktop, create shortcut, but particularly when you search for them, sometimes you can drag it to the desktop and it'll create shortcuts. Other thing, it won't let you put things on the desktop. And I've struggled on Windows 10 with that because there are certain things that, you know, people are desktop clickers rather than taskbar clickers.
I know. I'm so bad. You know, you're talking about the recycle bin and I'm like going, Mark, I'm so guilty. I just go, well, if they put it in a recycle bin, it should be the garbage, right? So I just... I delete the whole thing. And then, one of these days I'm like going, that's probably going to bite me. And I probably should take that out of my automated tasks. But, I'm stubborn sometimes.
there are some things I'd like to, when I'm done with their computer, I'd like to make sure it looks, the way they're familiar with.
Right.
Except on a wipe and reload, obviously, you can't always do that. But, I want them to be actually, I had some notes on that. But, I try to do as little changing of things as possible. Or if I do change things, I mention – one thing I typically do is down on the taskbar, starting, I think, with Windows 7 or maybe 8, instead of showing the icon and then a description of what the program is that it's open, it just shows an icon. I actually go to the taskbar properties, bring it up on my computer so I can bring it, and taskbar buttons. And if you click combine when taskbar is full rather than always combine hide labels, which is the default, at least you can tell, it's Internet Explorer because it's got the E and it says Internet Explorer down there, or it's, Chrome because it says, E and the tab that's open or whatever. So I show them that, and probably 90% of the people like that, so they can tell what's open on the bottom because it's the, it's about 2.5 inches wide rather than just an icon that you can sort of tell if it's open or not. So that's one thing I do kind of customize. But I ask them first. I say, here's what I like, recommend. Here's how it was before. Do you like that? Oh, yeah, that looks good. Okay, good.
That's good. No, that's a great tip because, I'm looking at, especially on some of these higher resolution screens, these things are, we all know what they look like, right? So we don't really care. We're like, hey, it's a pretty icon. I can click on it. I know what it is. But that would actually be nice for, I know for some people, it would definitely help them out to have that that name underneath and see what's opened up.
Right.
So that's a great idea. Yep. Yeah. So, one of the things that I do like about Windows 10 is I have it on, so I've got it on 1, 2, 3, 4 machines. And then my two boys, they upgraded their machines themselves. And then we did a clean install after they upgraded. But anyways, so one of the things I like is I started using OneDrive for sharing between my computers. And so I on this Windows 10 computer, I just went and searched for Internet Explorer. I opened it up. And it's amazing that all because I'm logged in on several computers, that whatever was on one. Now, this at first this got me because what it was doing is every time I would log in, it's changing my wallpaper on all these computers because it syncs everything. So one of the things I had to do was I went in and turned off syncing of themes so that, I could have different wallpapers onto different computers instead of everything being the same. But as far as, syncing between all the stuff that I use all the time, it works great. Uh-huh. So I really thought that was cool.
Not many of my clients are using more than one computer, and particularly more than one Windows 10 computer, but I can see once they do, they could see that. Most of my clients are, their secondary device is either an iPad or
right.
maybe their smartphone, something like that. So, and I'm helping a lot of people with that. I had a client just last week that, he wanted to, install the next iOS 8.4 or something. He was, this actually before 9 came out. He wanted to upgrade to that because he was running out of room on his phone. And so I showed him how to, enable iCloud photo library and we were able to back those up. He thought he'd have to delete all these things for his phone. Well, once you turn on iCloud photo library, it basically shrinks the size of the photos on your phone. So now you got a bunch more space. Using Google Photos as a backup. So once you put Google Photos on there, you can on your iPhone, for example, it'll back that on up to Google. And then in Google Photos, it has an option to delete the item on your device. So if you don't want particular items or any of the items on your phone, it'll just keep them all on Google. And, you can make room on your phone for that too. So,
oh, that's a great piece of it. Yeah. So now, let me ask you a question, because I ran into this the other day. So if you are using an iPad and you don't have a AirPrint printer, is there any other way that you can get your iPad to sync up with the printer to be able to print from it?
I know they make hardware solutions that you can connect to your printer.
Okay.
But But what I have used is the Netgear Genie program on your PC. Will has a thing that'll basically share. You know, your PC has to be on, but as long as your PC is on, it's got a basically it makes your printer that's attached to your PC AirPrint compatible, and that's what I've used.
Interesting. Okay, I'll definitely check. So you said it was Network or Netgear Genie.
Yeah, the Netgear Genie. So, you know, typically it's for managing your Netgear routers, but the Netgear Genie program will work on any computer. And again, any computer that is shared on that PC, you can make AirPrint compatible.
Okay, great. Yeah, I know they sell devices and, you know, quite honestly, some of these older HP printers, I'm kind of like, you know, you can probably get a newer one. They're really not that expensive, and it'll have the AirPrint, you know, capability and all that kind of stuff. In this particular situation, her computer was down, so she wanted to be able to print from her iPad. So this wouldn't be a solution for that, but as long as her computer was up and running, this would be a great solution. So I'll definitely check into that.
Right. Yep.
Very cool. All right. So, what do you have? Any other favorite tools that you use, software or hardware wise, besides TechWaru?
Let's see. One I ran across that I needed on a reinstall a couple of weeks ago, PCIdatabase.com, where, you know, there were certain devices on a laptop that, you know, was that were on, you know, in the device manager that were where you were unable to, you know, it didn't pull out the driver up off the internet. I was able to see exactly what device it was, so I could download it from the Dell website. You know, even though, you know, you type in the number, what are they calling it? You know, the serial number from the computer.
Oh,
not
yeah.
The serial number. You know,
I know what you're talking about.
The special number. It'll still present you with, you know, five different drivers. You know,
yes.
Which may or may not be installed. So at least with PCI database, there's two sets of numbers you can type in from that, and you can figure out, oh yeah, that's the Intel wireless driver, or that's the you know, whatever sound driver, or whatever. So that website was able to help me a lot with that. What other?
Yeah, it seems like, you know, when it comes to especially or Dells or HPs or whatever, it doesn't really matter. It seems like they always. You know, I can use like driver packs and Windows updates and get most of the drivers on there that I need. The only ones I won't update from Windows Update is the video card and the wireless card, because I've had them hose way too many systems. But the other thing is that you've got this, there's always one, and it doesn't tell you what it is. And a lot of times you're like going, okay, it's not the card reader. You know, what is this thing? And sometimes it might be something simple like the USB 3.0 driver. And you're like, going, where in the world is this thing? And so you got to dig down and try to find that particular driver. And sometimes it's a, you know, it's an Intel chipset driver that you got to, it's just, yeah, it's horrible when it comes to that stuff. So,
yeah. Yeah. So you can go into, I don't know if you knew this or not, but you can go into the device manager, and I'm going to just kind of do it on my computer as I'm doing here, system properties, device manager, and you can just right click on any device and go to the details and then pull up the hardware IDs, and that will show you the, you know, usually a set of numbers that you can plug into PCIdatabase.com and find out exactly what it is.
And that's, I guess that's the missing piece, because I knew you could do that. I just didn't know where to put it so that you could actually come up with whatever it was. So that's great. Because even when you take those, the hardware ID and you put it on, you know, you put it in a Google search, it may or may not give you what you
right.
need.
Right.
Or, you know, are you going to get, you know, driver detective and this and that and the other? And you're like, come on. Okay, that's great. So PCI database is what the name of it is then. All right.
Yep. A couple other tools I'm using in my notes here. Process Explorer and Auto Runs.
Yes.
Yes, internals tools. I use those a lot. Of course, TechWaru, Acuity for scheduling, Constant Contact for my newsletters. And then there's a company, Amsterdam. They sent me their cool stylus pen as a, you know, just sent me one and said, you know, you can have your name printed on these. And I actually hand those out because I got a lot of customers that, well, obviously like pens, and they're using an iPad or, you know, iPhone or smartphone or something. So this pen, basically, it's got a stylus. And then when you click the top, it's got a pen point that pops through the stylus, and it's an all-in-one pen stylus. And then, of course, it's got my name on there and my phone number and everything. So people love those.
Oh, that's great.
As a little promotional item, basically.
Sure. Yep. That's great. Yeah, that's better than a, you know, just a magnet.
Yeah. However, I have magnets too. I forgot about those.
Yeah. Well, you know, back in the days during desktops, right, I would take my magnet and I could put it on anybody's desktop computer because, you know, the sides were metal. You know, nowadays with these plastic laptops and everything, it's like, you know, yeah, obviously nobody's going to like if I take a sticker and like smack it on the bottom of their machine. Hey.
So in that case, I'll still give them the magnet, but I'll say, yeah, you know, put me next to the pizza guy on the refrigerator.
There you go. Yep.
Or next to the, you know, on the filing cabinet next to the, you know, your yearly calendar from your doctor or whatever.
Right.
Know,
so. That's great. So, yeah. Any other tools that did you find useful for yourself?
Let's see here. I've got a couple of jobs that were like way too easy, but they're kind of interesting.
Okay.
One customer calls me up. And, you know, I don't just work on computers. You know, one customer, he couldn't get a Dish Network on his TV after there was some kind of change, I forget. But basically, his TV was just on the wrong input. And, you know, it was on channel instead of, you know, HDMI 1 or something. So I went over there and fixed that for him.
Okay.
Another one, I had a lady that was trying to hook up some wireless headphones to her television set. And there was an issue with that. I think that was also an input problem. She was trying to hook it up to the she was hooking it up to the right input, but on the TV, I think there was audio out on the TV, but for some reason it wasn't working. So we ended up going audio out on her, I think on her satellite box or something like that. There was an audio out there and it worked fine there. So was able to solve that for, you know, so not just computers, you know, definitely helping with the iPhones. People have a lot of questions about that. That's why I like going to people's houses because they always come up with something, something else where, you know, where I thought it was just going to be an hour appointment, you know, I can extra get an extra 15 minutes or half hour out of them by, you know, solving some other problem that they've been having and they love it.
That's a great point. You know, I've always encouraged people too, because I, you know, I used to do a lot of things that were flat fees, and you know, I still do if you bring them to me. But you know, that's because I can work on several things at one time. But yeah, anytime I go on site anymore, it's, you know, it's an hourly rate, you know, similar to yours. And I decided I came up with the hourly rate, and I, you know, I do the 15-minute increments and all that kind of stuff too. And
yep.
You know, the only different, probably the only thing that I add if I got to go out, which makes it a little bit more expensive, but in my opinion, still worth it, is, you know, a trip charge, you know, a one-time trip charge on top of that for back and forth stuff. So
yeah. I'll do a trip charge if it's out of too far out of my area. I've got some clients that, you know, I've had for a long time that, you know, they've moved, you know, 30 miles out of town or something. And I'll do a trip charge is basically the time it takes me to get from my house out to their place. So it's kind of half price.
Oh, okay.
But I won't charge them for the time coming back. But basically Reno area is about, you know, 400,000 people or so. So that's kind of my basic area that I'm servicing. And then anything beyond that, I'll charge a trip charge. But again, it's got to be an existing client and worth, you know, I want to be there at least an hour and a half, 2 hours
sure.
to kind of make up for it.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't travel more than 6 miles, but, yeah.
Nice.
So it's more of a convenience, but you know, it's still 15 minutes in a car there and back. So
sure. Yeah. A couple other odd jobs here. You know, I've hooked up and programmed a Roku device, you know, for people. That's the, you know, media streaming device from their
yeah.
TV. Set that up for them. A lot of times they'll call me because, you know, they go to the store and they say, oh, you'll need a wireless router as well, which they don't have. So I'll hook up the wireless router. I'll connect the Roku. I'll program it. And, you know, now they can watch Netflix. So they love that. Had a call a couple weeks ago. The batteries in their Mac keyboard were not working. I opened it up and batteries were just in the wrong direction. So fix that. Just you know, love simple ones like that. Another lady, I programmed the speed dial on her for her new voicemail number. I guess her telephone provider had changed the voicemail number, you know, to call and get her voicemail. It used to be one number. They changed it. So she wanted me to go program all of her cordless phones in her house for that new voicemail number to call. So
nice.
That was an easy one. So yeah, just all sorts of things there.
It sounds like you do a lot of things to, you know, basically help people out in whatever their technological needs are.
Yeah. In fact, on my newsletter, I mentioned, you know, I don't just do computer work, you know, I help with all of your tech gadgets, basically. There's a, you know, I won't go set up like surround sound systems or home theaters, though I probably could. I just don't do enough of those. Or, you know, once it involves, you know, wiring where, you know, you could have to drill into a wall or something, that's beyond my scope. But anything else, you know, or certainly give it a try. Or if I've done it before, you know, at my own house, definitely, you know, I'll do that as well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I still try to, stay away from the wiring if at all possible.
Right.
There's just a lot of time and effort involved in that. And, you know, making one misstep on that stuff. You know, I mean, I used to do home remodeling and stuff. So it's like, I got away from that stuff just because I, you know, I wanted to do something that was a little easier, especially as I'm getting older.
Right.
So, yeah. All right. Go ahead.
Quick thing just in my notes here. So a lot of people I've mentioned on or heard on different podcasts when they're installing, you know, setting up a new computer for something, they'll throw, you know, WinZip or 7-Zip or something like that on the computer. And I ask why. Microsoft has a built-in unzipping program. All you got to do is say extract all, and it unzips everything. I don't know anyone that actually needs to zip something. You know, I can see it when you need to zip something. 7-Zip may be easier, but you know, you don't need a zipping program, and I don't see why.
So, and I'll give you a perfect example of why. Okay. I stopped doing this.
Okay.
Because I had a customer and I was just doing the normal things. I was, you know, I cleaned up her computer. Actually, it wouldn't boot. I got it to boot and, you know, I was just doing a regular cleanup on it. I was, you know, updating Java and all that kind of stuff. And for whatever reason, I don't know, back in the day, probably 10, 15 years ago, I've been clicking on, you know, however long Ninite's been around, I'm clicking on 7-Zip and, you know, just I put it in there and not really thinking about it until she gets her computer back home and she calls me and she goes, I can't, she goes, I've got all these zip pictures that are very, very important to me of my daughter who ice skates and I can't click into them and, you know, click on them and get them to open up. And right away I knew, I go, oh, that was my bad. So I had to remote it. She's in New York now. So I had to remote it in the computer and I go in there, I pull 7-Zip out, you know, in the Windows zip program works just fine. She can get back in there like she's normally used to. So I did it out of bad habit, I guess. And I stopped doing that now on a customer's machines. I'm like, yeah, you know what? Windows 7 and above, you know, we're good with the Windows zipping program.
So. Yeah, just press extract all, follow the prompt, you know, the prompts basically, and now they're unzipped.
Now, I will tell you something I still do, and I still will download Adobe Reader. And a lot of people say, well, why? I said, because here's the thing. Back in the day, you know, if you had a disk that needed Adobe Reader or whatever, or even nowadays, if you need Adobe Reader, what's going to end up happening is if I don't download an updated version of it, a lot of times through different programs and stuff, people were getting these older versions that were way out of date. And would just, you know, have a bunch of holes in there that malware and different things could get in. So I was like going, you know what? That's why. Because at some point, some program somewhere is going to tell them, I don't care whether you use Foxit Reader or whatever, they're going to tell them you need Adobe Reader. And they're going to make you download it. So yep. I might as well have it. I set it up to where it automatically updates and all that kind of stuff too. But that's why I do it.
Yep. And they, or they'll go search Yahoo for Adobe Reader free download. And
yes.
Get it from some third-party site and get Adobe Reader and 15 other things they didn't want. So
exactly. So I can do it. Well, yeah, you're exactly right. And now, do you use anything like Unchecky? Have you played around with that program?
I don't because, you know, I know I'm sure some of the programs out there are, oh, in fact, I've seen some where they're kind of doing the reverse that say, check this box if you don't want our additional adware.
Oh.
So it does the opposite.
Oh, that's, you know what? It was, you know, it was inevitable. You're right. That's okay. That's a good point. I didn't realize that. All right.
I've also seen, you know, if you, you know, Google actually is pretty good. I advise people to use Google because they are typically, if it's an ad, it's very clear that this is an ad versus Yahoo. You know, they might have a slightly different shading behind the search results and a very small thing that says ad. But at least on Google, you can tell the ads. Yahoo is, you know, you can't really tell the ads from the non-ads, of, you know, if you're not experienced at watching for those. But what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, I've had some people, you know, oh, hear about Unchecky on Kim Commando or whatever, and then search on Yahoo for it, and they get Unchecky and 15 other things. They get, so.
Yeah, so you're right. If that stuff is starting to come down where it's saying, you know, check this box, you know, you're basically – yeah, it's that's not going to help.
So. Yeah, so now you need a checky program instead of an uncheck.
There we go. So now we're going to have checky and uncheck. And let's just, you know, put a bunch of malware on the customers' computers, anyways.
Right.
So. Hey, you know what? It keeps us all in business, and it makes times exciting, and it's never a dull moment.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's what I love about this. You know, every day. You know, I don't dread going to work. Every appointment is, you know, something a little different, something exciting. You know, it changes by the minute. I remember one appointment I was working on where, you know, I downloaded, you know, Adobe, you know, I think it was 10.3 or something back then. And by the time I got downstairs to work on their downstairs computer, 10.4 had come out. So I put 10.4 and had to go back upstairs and put 10.4 on their upstairs computer again, because while I was there, there was an upgrade of Adobe Reader, you know, so. You know, it just changes by the day, and I just love it. It's having a blast.
Yeah, you know, it makes it definitely exciting. So I guess, yeah, we've had a lot of great information, and so I guess what would be your parting business tip, you know, that works in your business that you could give to the listeners?
I guess. Oh, good question. You know,
sorry.
People like you. Well, I learned this from my advertising day as well. People buy from you. So, you know, if they like you, you know, they're going to buy from you, whether, you know, you're selling them, you know, working on their computer or selling them, you know, a bunch of bricks or something. I don't know.
Right.
You know, they like you. So I like to keep that, you know, rapport with my customers, my clients. That's why I kind of like – I've shied away from the automatic remote support things that, you know, just takes care of it and, you know, only prompts them to call when they have a problem. That's where the, you know, quarterly phone call with them and, you know, kind of talk and chat and say, oh, how are the kids doing? And, you know, how you know, you just develop a rapport with them, and that helps a lot because they like you.
I agree. Yeah.
Liking you, then they also will recommend you. You know, so that leads to more customers and everything. So I guess that'd be my best tip.
That's good. No, that's a great piece of advice for people because, you know, a lot of times we're just thinking about, you know, what's the next way to, you know, to make money. But I think most people get in this business, you know, whatever type of business you do a lot of times, but I think most people get into this business because they truly want to help people. You know, there are people out there that just want to make a dollar bill, and that's, you know, whatever, that's fine. I mean, we're all entitled to make money, but I think when you really put the customer first and you get paid accordingly, I think it makes it, you know, a win-win situation. So that's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Mark, I definitely appreciate you coming out and, you know, just sharing all this great information and the great stories and stuff. And I've had a blast talking to you. If people want to get in contact with you or, you know, get some more of your advice, what would be the best way to do that?
I'd say probably on Google Plus.
Okay.
I think you can just look me up under Mark Cobb. I may even have the short URL after that. I forget. yeah, just look me up on Google Plus and you'll find me there. I usually post things there that are, you know, technology related. It actually also goes over to Twitter as well, but Google Plus probably. I like the interaction better on Google Plus. At least you can reply back easier than Twitter. So
Yeah, and I, you know, it's you give out great information with around the technology field. And the other thing that I really like is that, you know, mainstream media is not on Google Plus, so it makes it a nice environment to be a part of. There's no Oprahs or anything like that, so we're safe, and we can actually communicate with each other without being bombarded with a bunch of media presence.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I guess I did get the short URL. So plus.google.com plus Mark Cobb.
Okay, great. Yeah, I think I did too. It was a long time ago. Well, definitely appreciate you coming and sharing. And you guys, if you want to find me on the Google Plus, you can find me at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on this show like Mark was, just email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you guys need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. You guys can help support the Podnuts Network. Next time you're shopping on Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Hallish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.